Fierce Athlete Podcast.
We are female athletes being raw and real about the joys and struggles of life, both on and off the field.
We share how faith can both heal our wounds and reveal true beauty.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Fierce Athlete Podcast. I am your host, Sam Kelly, and we are continuing our Fighting for Women in Sport mini-series. If you have followed us, you know that we recently interviewed Riley Gaines. If you haven't listened to that, that was just such a rich and beautiful interview, and we just continually thank her for all she's doing. But as a follow-up, there has been another just beautiful, strong female voice that has arisen in this transgender crisis that we're facing, in this fight for women's sports and fighting against biological men and being allowed to compete against women. And that voice, that beautiful voice, is none other than Paula Scanlon. And we have her. We are so blessed to have her today on the podcast. Paula, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Now, for those of you who haven't been following this issue, though, as a female athlete, I highly encourage you to follow it and to speak out. And we'll talk to Paula a little bit more about that. But Paula was a swimmer, actually, at Penn, at the University of Pennsylvania. So she was teammates with Thomas in her time there, and obviously went through a lot of pain and suffering through that. And so we're going to talk to her a little bit about that. But beyond that, she's a brilliant woman. She was an engineering degree, computer science, I believe. And she also, grew up in Connecticut and is a Catholic. And so really a lot of things that Fierce embodies. I feel like as I've gotten to know Paula, she is a fierce athlete. And so I'm so excited, Paula, to just learn more about you. I've listened to a lot of your interviews, and I'm so thoroughly impressed with how well spoken you are. But we know that you didn't just wake up one day and decide, okay, I finally have the courage to speak out on this issue. You know, virtue and courage is a virtue. It comes from like the grind day in and day out. It comes from your background. It comes from the things that you've had to deal with throughout your lifetime that have led you up to this point. So let's back up. I would love to just hear about your upbringing. Where'd you grow up? How did swimming play into that? How did athletics play into that? And then finally, yeah, how did your faith play into getting you to this point?
Yeah, so there's a lot. So I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and I was baptized Catholic. But interestingly enough, my mom is Protestant, and my father is Catholic. But they decided to baptize us Catholic. As kind of we progressed through life, there was some issues at our local parish, not, you know, the bad, really bad ones. There was just a money laundering situation, not like a super crazy scandal. But my father had at that point had decided that we might want to take a break and start visiting other parishes. So we were kind of Catholic homeless for what it was worth. And it was kind of at this point, my mom came in and said, oh, you know, would you guys be open to starting to go to Protestant Mass? I have a good one that a lot of my friends in town went to. So we were kind of splitting time between going to some Catholic Masses and some Protestant Masses. So we were doing that. And then in that time, I did not actually end up getting confirmed Catholic because I was actually confirmed in this Protestant church. So that was like kind of my younger like faith background, but I'll get into fully becoming Catholic in a little bit. But again, always close to the Catholic faith. We would go to Catholic Mass, just not as regularly as I might go now. So that was definitely a good part of my upbringing. I mean, overall, just having the faith aspect in my life was very comforting. So I actually am dyslexic, and my brother is 8 years older than me, and he's a really strong student. So me being at a lower academic level than he was something very challenging for me. And it was interestingly, in third grade, our town, our YMCA, finished building an Olympic-sized pool, and my dad swam in high school, and he thought it would be good for me to join. So I joined the swim team and started swimming, and I didn't really take it very, very seriously at all. But it wasn't until my brother went off to college when I was in sixth grade that I thought, you know, this is my opportunity to have something that's really truly mine, because my brother didn't do it and it wasn't related to school. And at that point, I figured out academics in some sense. It was something for to really be mine. And something happened to me in that first month my brother went to college, where kind of a flip switched in my mind. And even when my brother came back for his first break in October, he said, you know, I seemed completely different. And I think what happened in that moment, I kind of turned on a passion that I'd never really had before. So that was something that was very cool and a very like life-changing part of my life. So that was the swimming background. And then obviously at that point I did it every single day. We had practice in the morning, 5 o'clock. We started doing that in seventh grade through high school. And obviously once I was later in high school, I really started looking at colleges and saw that swimming at D1 or D3 or other options, just any type of swimming in college is going to be an opportunity for me. So that was definitely very, very cool. And no one in my family had really been as dedicated to a sport as I was. So it was a very cool experience where I was really the first in my family to be so interested in athletics. So that's like the early stage. I mean, there's a lot more, but that's really like my start.
Yeah. So, why Penn? I mean, obviously you, which is beautiful. You discovered this, I think, an outlet, obviously in a time where you were trying to discover yourself, you discovered this outlet. And that's one of the beautiful things of sport, right? It builds confidence. And when we find that God has created us athletic, right, 'cause it's a gift from him. Being able to use that. I mean, at least this is in my case, I almost felt fully alive. Because it was something that I had almost been created to do, you know, and he took pleasure in, and I took pleasure in. Once that passion became something you wanted to pursue in college, how did you just attend?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, my entire family went to Penn. So both my parents went there and my brother went there as well. Obviously my brother, he ended up enrolling in a dual degree program at Penn. That's very, very hard to get into. So people often say legacies, you know, have an advantage and whatever, but his program is very selective. It's 25 students per year that get in. So he got into that. He was, you know, top five in his class in high school. I was not. I had good grades. I did well in school, but I was not that stellar A+ student or someone who could be valedictorian or do those things. So it was really swimming that was that extra kind of, for lack of a better word, resume boost that I, you know, my brother didn't need because he was a strong student, but I had that. So it was really the combination of being, you know, a decent student and, you know, also having this swimming that helped me get into to a school that, you know, was so important to my family. And actually, it's very interesting that all this is happening because we've been so strongly connected to Penn for so long. And obviously all of this is kind of turned me away from Penn a little bit and kind of left me with a bad taste in my mouth. But it was like the perfect balance for me to kind of do the same path my parents did, but do it in a different way. So it was a very weird mix.
Hey, a more well-rounded mix, right? And, an engineering degree at Penn is no easy feat while being a D1 swimmer. Obviously you learn to balance that. So let's talk a little bit about the swim culture at Penn. What was it like, being on the Penn swim team, maybe when you started, and then, let's start talking a little bit about what happened with Will Thomas and, when that was brought to light, and then, you know, the progression to obviously what everybody is more familiar with, you know, him being allowed to swim on your team and in the Ivy League championships and in the NCAA championships. But I'd be curious as to, you know, I think you have a unique insight as to the culture of the team and how that kind of progressed.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, our coach is a very lighthearted guy. He's always making fun of people. He's not like people expect for a team culture to permit this to happen. There would be a very serious coach who takes rules very seriously and all this, but our head coach was not like that. He was lighthearted, would always make jokes at people, would tell embarrassing stories about previous people who had been on the team. He just, you know, no filter in a lot of ways is the best way to explain him. And he's a great guy. I really don't blame him for any of this that happened. But it is just surprising because you would expect a more rigid team culture to have happened on. But my freshman year, normal, we didn't have any men competing on the women's team. It wasn't until my sophomore year, this is the fall of 2019. And keep in mind, all of this didn't blow up until fall 2021. So 2 years later, we had a team meeting. And it was very interesting because the men's team was separated from us. And they had a meeting before we did. And then we had a meeting. And we're a combined program. So we never really have meetings separate from each other unless, you know, one team did something the other team didn't do or something. It's very, very rare. So it was weird that the men went first and then we went. So I knew something strange was going on. And then we get to this meeting and a member of the men's team is still sitting there named Will Thomas. Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, huh, I wonder like why maybe Will hung back to continue to talk to our coach or whatever. And our coach starts the meeting, Will's still there. And Will says, our coach goes to Will and says, this is your meeting. You take over. And it was less than 5 minutes. This member of the men's team said, I'm transgender and I will be starting on the women's team next season. This season I will be transitioning and I will still be on the men's team, but next season I'll be with you guys. That was it. There's no Q&A opportunity. There was nothing. It was just, you know, I'm still Will, but I'm going to be on your team. And again, at this point, I never even announced a name change. So we were like, oh, is there anything we can call you? Will just said, continue to call me Will, but I refer myself as she, her pronouns now. And then that was it. And then our coach just told everyone to get in the pool. So that was very interesting. And in that interim time, Will started to wear a woman's suit sometimes, but was still changing the men's locker room. And then occasionally, a girl on the women's team would invite Will to come into the women's locker room, but would give us a warning, would say, hey, Will's going to be coming into the locker room. Is everyone decent? So we had a warning. And then obviously COVID happened and this was delayed because in the fall of 2020, when Will would have joined the women's team, was delayed. And Will is actually supposed to graduate in 2021. So a lot of us said, oh, maybe this won't even happen at all. And then they decided to take a gap year. And so then it happened the following season. Hmm. And yeah, and then at that point, you know, Will had already named themselves Leah and had their own locker in the locker room. There was not a warning every single time. I don't know what makes it so different a year apart or a year and a half apart, but for some reason we got a warning then and then we didn't get one when the season actually happened. So that was the background of it. And I tried so hard actually to raise awareness to the situation. I asked a lot of people for advice. I said, you know, is there any way that this won't happen? I read up on the NCAA policies. I tried to reach out to the limited number of people that had expertise in this. A lot of them didn't respond to me because, you know, I didn't know how to contact them correctly. But I did think that there was going to be a way to stop it. And the best way to explain what actually happened was it was a slow-moving train wreck. We knew for 2 years. We tried to do some things to make it not happen. We tried to bring up conversations amongst parents and other teammates. But ultimately, what happened happened, and it continued for an entire season.
Hmm. What drove you to try to say something? You know, like you easily could have heard that, accepted it, and sat back. Why did you try to speak out? Why were you at least trying, right, to find people to advocate for you? You know, what drove you to do that?
I think what it was, and this is harder to admit, but Will was a very, very talented men's swimmer. And I think if Will hadn't been as strong, maybe I wouldn't have reacted the same way that I did. But Katie Ledecky is the fastest female swimmer in the events that Will swam. Will is seconds, many, many seconds faster than Katie in every single one of those events. I think it really was a numbers thing. And it was so dramatic. Like, you don't even really need to know that much about swimming, but I know that taking hormones are going to make you slower. To the extent that that happens, very unclear. But yes, okay, sure, they make you a little bit slower. But I just thought to myself, imagine no hormones and Will is swimming against Katie Ledecky. Will would win. And I think when I saw that, I said, okay, this is not just a random member of our men's team that wants to transition to the women's team. This was one of the top members of the men's team transitioning to the women's team. And that was very dramatic. And I think at that point, I knew immediately that Will would probably be an NCAA champion. And that's actually what ended up happening. And again, I didn't know that for certain, but in my heart, I knew that if this happened, that's what the outcome was going to be. And that's a very dramatic outcome. And again, I was right on that. And I think maybe if Will had been a little slower, it might have not been as big of a deal. But I think really looking at the numbers, I immediately knew this was not going to be fair.
Yeah. And it's sad that it's not as obvious to people, right? I mean, just scientifically, yeah. It's like you can speak more into this than me, but it's a level of testosterone, right? But what about the bigger heart, the bigger lungs, you know, the bigger throat, the bigger hands, the bigger feet, you know, all of these things that you really can't nullify, that are the natural differences between biological men and biological women, that would allow for a man to dominate in the women's category, right? And we're seeing this repeatedly in other sports. It shocks me, it angers me, it upsets me that people are so blind to that truth.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is when I started talking to friends I had and others, so many people just said, okay, Paula, that's not gonna happen. Like, somebody will come in, like, you can't just do that. Like, I had friends on the track team I was very close with, and I would tell them about it, and they were like, you're funny. And I was like, no, I'm not kidding. And they would say, oh, you know, this hasn't been confirmed yet. This is not going to happen. And I would go on and rampages about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And people would just say to me, like, okay, well, sure. Hypothetically, if that did happen, it would be terrible. But it's not happening. And there will be rules that will fix it. And I said, guys, I don't think that there will be. I've read the NCAA policy and it's terrible. And everyone's like, oh, whatever. So I think a lot of that was just, it was a lot of people dismissing it and saying, oh, of course that would be ridiculous. But that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think obviously it did. And unfortunately, at that point, when everyone opened their eyes to this, it had already been too late, right? Because once the season starts, it's what are you going to do? Ban somebody from competing? I don't think that that's fair. I don't think Leah did anything wrong in the situation either. It was the policies that allow this to happen, and they committed to having the season be the way that it was. So what were you going to do? Ban someone mid-season?
Yeah, they put themselves in a tough circumstance. And I think that and maybe you can speak a little bit into this. You were effectively silenced, right? Like, I'm very impressed with how well read you are in this and became, right? You studied the NCAA policy. You're a smart woman. You had, outside of biology, right? You had legitimate facts of like how this wasn't properly protected. And I mean, I'm sure you had, just like your track friends, you maybe were more privy to the reality than a lot of others. You know, like I hoped too that the NCAA would say something. I assumed they had to, and obviously they didn't, and they still aren't, which is frustrating. Though some other governing bodies are speaking out. But talk a little bit about Penn as a whole. Like, what was their reaction to you trying to say something, and how has that then fueled your openness now?
Yeah. So at the beginning, I remember talking to, I had friends that had graduated already at this point, and I kept in touch with a few of my old teammates, and a lot of them were saying, you know, I think this is going to end up being a really big deal, and I think Penn isn't getting on top of this. Mike, our head coach, wasn't really addressing the situation beforehand. We started the season with a huge elephant in the room and no one said a word. There was no team meeting conversations about it. There was nothing. And granted, there was a full season off because of COVID. And so I think part of it was everyone was dying to get back in, and a lot of people hadn't even swam in the past year. And there was a lot of uncertainty and a lot of people who had been taking gap years and people who weren't coming back to the team and people who were, and just a lot of moving parts with the whole idea of losing the whole season of athletics, of course. But we never had a meeting about it. We never once talked about it. And it was just, Leah had a locker in the locker room. Leah's a member of the women's team. We're all women's team. This is what it looks like. And I said, oh, you know, okay, I guess it's a situation. Now we're in it. I'm just going to have to deal with it. I have a year left. I was a senior, right? I just said, we're going to get through it. But it was as these meets started happening, and I was, again, I also didn't know how fast Leah was going to swim. My understanding is Leah didn't even swim at all in the year break.
Wow.
Which I think find very interesting, because what if they had, right? Mm-hmm. Like Leah might have been even faster. And so, you know, I just, like, you know, these meets, I was just wondering, and obviously dominant from the beginning. And I was tracking the news, tracking the media, waiting for somebody to get a hold of the story and figure out a female Ivy League student, right? Not really dropping these times. Maybe somebody should look into it, because that's not normal. Also, the Ivy League is not a league that wins at NCAAs almost ever. Mm-hmm. That's not common. So just having someone dropping the top time in the Ivy League, or in the whole NCAA, sorry, from the Ivy League, I mean, it does happen occasionally, right? There are occasionally you get a fast person. That's not normal. And so something, I was waiting for someone to just kind of see a red flag and look into it. And I was just tracking the media, and I was just like, okay, well, there's nothing I can do. I'm not going to petition to the NCAA. I'm not going to make a fuss. I just wanted to have a normal year. But it was actually Donna De Verona is an old swimming Olympian, and she's a close friend of my parents. She actually lives in our town. And over Thanksgiving break, my parents had dinner with Donna and her husband, and Donna had heard about the story. And she actually said, you know, have Paula come over to my house tomorrow. I want to talk to her about this. And we had a really long conversation, and I was actually a member of the men's team, who is a close friend of mine. He's not from the area, so he was actually with my family for Thanksgiving, and he also went. And we talked to her about all of this, and she basically said, you need to say something about it. She didn't tell me how to do that exactly, but she told me, like, you can't just sit quietly. Like, we have to do something. And I said, okay. And I thought about it. So then at this point, the championship meet happened where Leah broke a bunch of records, and that's when the news stories really piled on. So I was tracking the news, and I sent emails to every single reporter that wrote an article. And I said, hi, I'm a member of the women's team.
Wow.
I'd like to give you some context on what's happening. I want to talk about it. A lot of them didn't respond, but one of them did. And I had done an interview, and I did an anonymous interview with this reporter actually at Outkick. And we did it. And then we did the interview, and the article didn't immediately come out. Then we had a team meeting because the media was blowing up so large. And that's in the meeting. They said, you guys should not talk to the media. You will regret it. They offered us the psychological services there. They said we had to start having mandatory team meetings at the LGBT center, all this. And I had already done the interview, but it hadn't come out yet. Mm. So I'm thinking, oh no, what did I just do? And the guy emails me and says, we're ready to go live tomorrow. Like, just wanted to make sure that's okay. And I immediately am in a panic.
Sure.
And I had told one girl that I had done it, and she told the entire team. So when this anonymous article came out, everybody knew that it was me.
Ouch. Mm.
Yes. And it was probably the most challenging week of my entire life. I was getting really hateful messages from some of my teammates. Mm. And I was getting just screamed at by them. I was told I was a horrible person. They said, it's fine to have that opinion, but you shouldn't talk about it to the media. I was so stressed out, I actually got really sick. I got an 102-degree fever. I was in a panic. A few days later, I went to go meet with my Catholic leaders to ask them for advice. And they didn't even know how to react at that point. I mean, not that the advice wasn't helpful, but it was more like, you should just sit back and let God take the wheels on this. And that is what I did at that point. But, you know, it was already like, I was already kind of in it. So I did not know what to do. And they didn't know what to do because it was such a new situation. And I was looking for someone to tell me exactly what to do. And at that point, nobody knew. You know, do you continue doing media? Do you just stop with it entirely and just sit back and do the rest of your season? What is it that you do? But the person who actually was very helpful through this and comforting me was actually my assistant coach. She didn't specify to me what she believed about the situation. She never really told me how she was treated as a coach, but she did just tell me, you know, it's okay to have a difference of opinion. Everything will be all right in the end. She was very calming about it. She said our head coach should have handled some things better. She really was a great person that advocated for both sides. She's a mother. She has two young boys. So she was someone who I thought was very, very helpful in the whole situation. But again, it was so new that nobody knew how to handle it. So it was very... it was very challenging, and I didn't really leave my house for, you know, a lot of the time. I was afraid because I had kind of done this before they even told us not to, and then as everybody knew that it looked like I had blatantly disrespected what they had told us, which is, I mean, I guess I did, but not precisely. So,
sure, yeah. Well, first of all, thank you, and second of all, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry that nobody. gave you the right advice, including the church. But like you said, it was such a new issue, and you now speaking on it, I mean, there's others that have joined your voice, but you really were the groundbreaking voice on this. Even if it was quote unquote anonymous, it wasn't really, because your team knew, and you faced real persecution for having an opinion of, I mean, to be blatant, just objective truth, right? How, and maybe it didn't, I mean, obviously, you know, your Catholic leaders' advice was to turn to God, which is technically the right advice,
great
advice. I'd like some bit more, you know, but it is a fundamental truth. You know, you mentioned kind of not being confirmed till 2021, which is kind of around this time. Like, how did how did this whole situation challenge your faith? Maybe allow you to grow in your faith, like comfort you? I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just curious, like, how that affected you throughout this whole thing.
Yeah. So, oh gosh, this is so hard. So after this all happened and everyone knew it was me, I did have to talk to our head coach about it. And he told me, he was like, I don't really care what you do, whatever. Like, I would advise stopping to talk to the media, but like, you can have your own opinions. I don't care. I'm not going to kick you off the team. So I was like, okay, great. Like, I'm glad to know. I thought at that point, maybe I would be kicked off. I really did at this point think that was a possibility. Then he says, oh, you know, the only inconvenience you've caused me is I have to move your roommate on training trip. And I said, oh, that's okay. So I knew immediately like who my roommate was. And funny enough, this girl, and I later found out that that's, the whole situation is not really how my coach presented it, but my roommate on training trip was one of the other Catholic girls on the team that I'd gone to mass with and been in Bible studies with. And I remember feeling really thankful that she was my roommate on training trip, because I knew that she, you know, was believed in the faith and supported me and whatever. But then my coach randomly decided that we weren't going to room together, and said that she said it was because I was a transphobe, but that's not really what happened. I don't really know what led him to do that or what the context was, or if somebody else said it to try to rile something up. I still don't know what happened. And that's really when it was really challenging for me, because I said, oh my gosh, my Catholic peers don't support me. And that was really a moment where I said, okay, like my missionary could give me whatever advice she gave me. That's fine. But people in my community don't support me. And I felt very isolated. I really questioned God. I questioned if I was in the wrong on this. I thought maybe I was wrong. I really turned away from going to a lot of the Catholic groups on campus because of this. And again, some of it might have been my fault for not really diving into why the situation happened the way that it was. I mean, now obviously I'm back in touch with these girls, and only really the Catholic girls on my team have even reached out to me at all about this. And I'm in touch with this girl again, and we're fine, and she's great, and she's been a great support system, frankly, in coming out. But part of it is on me, maybe, for not divulging in what was precisely going on. But that really made it hard for me, where I really wanted to distance myself from the community of Catholics versus just going to Mass. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's many layers to it. Like, I would go to Mass alone, but I wouldn't stay for group brunch after, or I wouldn't go to the Thursday meetings or the Friday night this or that. So I very much at that point wanted to continue with my one-on-one in relationship with God, but not to also focus on the community that God gave me. And that was a very challenging time in my life, because it was so isolating. I mean, obviously God is good and God is great, and a relationship with God, I'm so happy I still had that. It was very grounding and amazing to have, but God also gives you a community for a reason. And I really turned away from that in that time. And so that was something that was very challenging for me. And also, I hadn't been confirmed Catholic until 2021. So it was still a very new community for me that I had had for about a year. And then I kind of ripped myself away from it. So that was definitely very challenging. But looking back at it now, being a year removed from why I did what I didn't, or what I might have done, I mean, it did help me grow stronger to appreciate the community in a way I don't think I did back then. So maybe sometimes, you know, you're put in these tough situations to see that. But it was definitely super challenging. And I don't know what I could have done differently looking back, because it was so complex. But that, yeah, it was definitely very hard.
Yeah, that is so hard, right? And that's one of the devil's tactics, is to divide, right? Because you're a threat. Yeah. You're a threat. I mean, you don't have to worry. None of us have to worry, because Jesus is Lord and crushes Satan, right? But you speaking out was a threat to his agenda. It is now, right? But again, we're all protected in the name of Jesus. And you know, it sounds like something got twisted and misunderstood, and that's really hard. But like you alluded to, God writes straight with crooked lines. Like, he, in his wisdom, he might have wanted you like away for a while, because like he had to be the one to build you up. He had to be the one to sustain you, because now your opposition's, you know, that you're public with this all is even more blatant, I would say, probably higher. You know that you can get through it with him, which is
yeah,
beautiful.
And I think, honestly, if I hadn't kind of distanced myself, I probably wouldn't have been public about it, because the biggest thing that weighed on my heart in the last year, that between the year between graduating and coming public, was thinking about these relationships that I had with these communities that I kind of, you know, we all just stopped talking, and they were the people I thought about every day in reflection on this, and how much I missed them and how much I missed what we had. And I think part of me was, I kind of didn't want to be the person who had to reach out first. And so in some ways I almost said, thinking to myself, that it might be easier if I just come public with all of this, because I know that when I do, they're going to come back and say something to me. And that's exactly what happened with every single person I was praying about for the last year. But within a week, every single one of them that had been on my heart and been on my mind came to me first. And no one was stopping me. Like, I could have easily done that. But in some ways, like, coming forward and being honest and spreading the truth was the easiest path to that. So it wasn't like each time I would have to do like a really long, you know, heartfelt explaining my heart. It was like I did these interviews where I spilled my heart and they could all watch it and then come to me. And I mean, and then we had each of them I had like an hour long conversation with. And, you know, so that was something very powerful where I think it was really in the last year of reflection and prayer and just thinking about these people. And it was, I really thought maybe that I would just forget about it and I would move on and I'd say it's not worth it. But it was, they kept on coming to my mind in the last year. And then, you know, I was kind of couldn't really be quiet anymore. And that's, I think ultimately that is what pushed me to come public. So it really worked out in a very beautiful way. And everything kind of happened for the right reason and God put everyone in the right place. So yeah, that is something I haven't really talked about in any of my interviews because it's not something that really comes up, but it's been really powerful and I'm really thankful for that.
That's so beautiful. And I think that's an encouragement too, for our listeners, right? We sometimes think that when we take a risk, right? Like this conversation or you speaking out, you know, doing different interviews with Matt Walsh and, you know, on different public platforms, we're going to lose friends, right? We're going to cause division. You know, I think that's what holds a lot of people back. You know, we're going to lose jobs or we're going to lose this and that. And some of that might be true, but it sounds like actually really beautifully in your case, you've gained back, people that the Lord put on your heart, but really some beautiful friendships. So you've had people who have, and it almost weeds out your true friends who have thanked you for your courage. Yeah, it's just beautiful to see God's fidelity. You know, if we speak out, if he's asking us to speak out, take that risk, like he's going to bless us.
Yeah. And I mean, I have had people in my life that don't necessarily agree with this. And have voiced their concerns with, you know, the message and what I'm standing for and whatever. But at the end of the day, I think we need to just think about who we're doing this for and why we're doing it. And I think ultimately you don't really want someone to support you only halfway or not only support you because you weren't speaking out about this. I think it's more important to have a smaller circle that's tighter than one that seems really big. But overall, it's been positive. I think more people than I ever would have imagined have reached out to me, thanking me, supporting me. I had a guy from high school who I couldn't even remember how I even met him in high school. Like, I don't know if we even had a class together, messaged me on LinkedIn. People you never would have expected. And those aren't going to turn into friendships or anything like that. But it just means something to hear that somebody, you know, took 3 minutes from their day to watch my interview or think about me or whatever, and then also follow up and send a message. I think that is very meaningful. And I think also like advice to other people would just be to speak your heart and the truth. This has been challenging in many ways for me, but the one thing that hasn't been is the ability to really just let go. I really felt in the last year that there was a huge burden on my back, that I felt like I was hiding secrets, that I felt dishonest even to myself, to the world. And just being able to let go of that, I think when Matt was obviously the first interview that I did, and I think something I told myself was, okay, I don't know if anyone will care about this after, but I just wanted to have one opportunity to tell my story in a single sit-down interview. And if that's the last time I ever get to do it, that I would be okay with that, because it just really let go of this weight on my, you know, on my back. And obviously that wasn't the last interview I've done, but having that, you know, just telling myself like even just once. And I think a lot of people think that if they speak out about it, it's going to be a forever job or whatever. But even if you just say the truth once and go on record once with the truth, you know that you did that and you contributed to trying to move the dial to make change. And I think a lot of people don't realize that they have an opportunity to tell the truth at any point, and it's not like they have to continue to make a career out of it or continue to spend all of their time advocating for it. I think if you just tell your story one time and it's there and others continue to spread your story, that it helps.
Now that's so encouraging. You know, we have a lot of young, we have listeners of all ages, all across the world. You know, but I think really where I try to aim a lot of these podcasts is to the young athlete, whether that's high school, college, you know, before that. I think that was some just great advice to them. But any just like thinking of yourself, right, when you were, you know, in middle school and pursuing swimming, and anything you'd have to say to that young girl in light of, well, anything really, like what advice would you offer her?
I would say to keep working hard at what you're passionate about, right? You don't have to do sports to be the best. I was not the best swimmer. And again, Riley is a champion. She's top NCAA swimmer. I was not. I never qualified for the NCAA championship. I never won Ivies. I never did anything like that. And I think people think that sports are about winning and about, you know, being the best. And of course, you want to get better. But I think a lot of it is how much you can improve yourself. I think for me, even dropping my own times is what swimming was about. Or if you play a team sport, just being a part of a team, like you don't have to score every winning goal, but being a part of the community and just the routine of training is very powerful. I think adding routine, even if you're not good at the sport, those things are very powerful. So don't get discouraged from doing a sport just because you're not the best at it. If you like it and you like the routine and the routine provides you opportunity in your day to get better and to reflect on other things that are going on, it's worth it. And I think that's something I wish someone had told me when I was younger, that it's sports aren't always about winning and being the best.
That's so good, right? It's about the journey. How about any spiritual advice for young athletes? I mean, obviously you've always been faithful, embraced it deeper in your college years, and you know, it's been kind of purified throughout this whole situation, but what spiritual advice, if any, do you have for young athletes listening?
I would say to always trust in God. I think for me, I used to get very anxious when I was swimming when I was younger, because I would always think about the outcome too much and say, I really want to go this specific time. And if I don't go this time, then it was a waste of my day and it was a wasted race. And I'm, you know, didn't work hard enough or whatever I might tell myself. For me, the biggest thing is to just let go and let the outcome that's meant to happen happen, and know that your time will come when it's your time. And every single race and every opportunity and every situation God puts you in is for a reason, right? So even if you have a bad race or a bad game, right, if you're not in like a swimming sport, can teach you things and you can have takeaways. And also, someone once told me that being nervous is God keeping you humble. I actually just heard this only a few weeks ago. And that's something I wish I had known as an athlete being young, because I always thought that being nervous was my own weakness, but I learned that it's actually God keeping you humble. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something very powerful that I wish I knew when I was in middle school and high school. So that's something I would like to share with others.
I love that. Well,
have you ever heard that before?
No, I haven't. And I'm thinking back.
I just
like,
heard it last.
Oh my gosh. Right? Yeah. Right. It's really good. And it shows you care, but you're right. It's, I just did a half Ironman a few weeks ago and I was so nervous, and I'm still struggling personally with the fact that I was so nervous. So that just helped me. I'm like, oh, okay. Like God was in that, right? God, he was in it, but I hate being weak. It's good for me. It's good for all of us. We're all weak,
but
right?
It's good.
But God is, God is in that nervousness and that weakness. And that's providing space for him to be our strength. So I love that. I love that. Thank you. Well, Paula, thank you just for who you are. It's been like such a gift getting to know you, for allowing our listeners just a glimpse into your heart, you know, like all the things I want to remind our listeners as I'm sharing this with you, like all the things we do, that's just like the icing on the cake. Our identity and our worth comes from the fact that we're daughters of God and we're each a unique reflection of him. And so just who you are is inspiring, but getting to watch you from a distance and now get to know you a little bit, it really is inspiring for me, but for a lot of young women. And, thank you for being that role model for them, that Catholic role model for them, right? Because we do need to be speaking up, and it's beautiful that somebody who embraces her faith is doing so very unified way, right? It's not all faith. It's not all science. It's this beautiful merging of presenting truth in light of both of those things. And so thank you just for who you are and for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you for doing what you're doing and giving me an opportunity to continue to share my story. So I appreciate you.
You got it. Well, thank you everybody for listening in. I would encourage you to follow Paula. We'll put her Twitter handle in the show notes. It's just a great way to stay up to date. I would ask that you continue to pray for her. We've been praying for her. Let's just put an army of prayer warriors behind her as she continues to speak truth in what can be a very hostile environment. So Paula, be assured of our prayers. And to our listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you for your courage. Learn from Paula, right? Taking a risk is worth it. God will bless you and he will convict you if that's what he wants you to do. And know that no matter what, we at Fierce are here for you too. So if you need anything, please feel free to reach out to us as well as follow us on social media at Fierce Athlete, or check out our website at fierce.org. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for all of your support and generosity. At Fierce, we are continuing to step up our game and fight for women in sport on this issue and other issues, but we can't do it without you. Please consider joining our monthly Fierce Athlete support team so that we can continue this mission. You can find out more information on our website, fierce.org. Until next time, everybody, God bless you and know of our prayers for you. Play fierce.
Pray fierce.
Live fierce.